your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Journey Radio Show. I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight. And hey, we're showing up as the She Squatchers as usual. So I've got my fellow teammate, Jenna Grover, on the line. Hey, Jenna, are you there?
I certainly am, and I'm super duper excited about tonight.
Well, me too. This is a really exciting show because Jenna booked our guest for tonight, and she's taking charge of the show tonight, so I'm pretty excited to see how this goes.
Yeah,
and
me
I'm
too.
I'm excited about the guest.
Yeah, usually, Jen, you take care of everything. I'm just kind of just there just to give some giggles and some laughs, so thank you for letting me bring William on the air tonight. In fact, let me just introduce him. His name is William Twofeather. He's a Native American medicine person who has literally toured around the world more than 20 years. And he's agreed to come on the show and have some fun. And I certainly appreciate it. He's been on the air multiple times, so I'm excited to hear what he says. The first half, we're hopefully going to be talking more about Bigfoot. And maybe the second half, maybe going into more of the metaphysical faith healing that he works on. So I'm super duper excited.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I love this stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, William, are you there?
Yes. Hello. Greetings from Galveston, Texas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I'm the third one out tonight with you two being in Galveston in sunny, warm beach country down there. We're having a blizzard tonight, supposedly.
Jen, it's not warm here. You'd think it would be, although I'm being kind of naughty. I mean, it is probably in what would you say, the 30s, do you think, William?
A couple of days ago, I was wearing short pants and a tank top.
Yeah, but what about today?
Today, no, I'd have to wear a pair of thermal underwears.
Yeah, exactly. So,
okay, well, we've been negative numbers below zero, so 45-mile-an-hour winds tonight with blowing and drifting snow and whiteout conditions. How about that?
Yeah, I'm really glad I'm down here in Galveston. And by the way, I met William Twofeather at a party, Jen. I don't know if I told you that, but I happened to be at a little soiree, and I got to meet William Twofeather, and he was so amazing. I'm so excited to hear some of his stories. He started telling me a little bit about Bigfoot, and I was like, oh, I've got to ask Jen if we can get him on here. So, William, I mean, where do we begin, Jen? What do you think we should ask first?
Oh, boy. Well, maybe William could tell us about which tribe he comes from first and a little bit of background information about him.
Sure. My mom is Apache and my dad is Austrian. In my mother's side of the family, we come from a long line of healers. Like my grandma was a healer, my great-grandma, her grandpa was a healer. And then on my father's side, we were blue bloods. We were baron in Austria during the Ottoman Empire. So I got a moccasin on one side and a big leather boot on the other one. So my feet in two worlds.
There you go.
Very nice.
Trained formally with three native-based healers here in the United States. And then after 5 or 6 years here on Turtle Island, I started going across the pond. And when I got across the pond, then I got to study with other kind of elders, like Aboriginal elders in Australia and Maori elders in New Zealand and Celtic Druid elders in Europe, and then with the Sami the indigenous tribe in northern Norway where the Vikings came back and the Samis will come down and heal them all up. So my training is not only in Native American faith healing, but in the other traditional places where I sat under the medicine umbrella and ate and drank and slept with them.
That's beautiful. I'm actually part Same and part Ojibwe, and it's been so interesting for me to see how almost identical the two cultural beliefs and traditions were between the two. And so there's lots of Same descendants down up where in Minnesota area, and for lack of having a tribe interaction here, they've been really enjoying their connections with the Ojibwe tribes up here. So that's been really neat.
For those of you that don't know what Sami means the indigenous tribe of northern Norway, Denmark, Sweden, up there in the Swedish countries, and they live up in the mountains. And my CD number 7, which hasn't got the graphics done yet, is called Shaman Rock, and it's based with the Samis up there in northern Norway, and we got together and made a whole CD called Shaman Rock, which is actually in Europe a new kind of like cultural thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Is that available to purchase?
Not yet. I got to finish the graphics, and it's all the music's been mastered.
Well, I do have to mention, I got to listen to some of it while we were at this party. We got to play his CD, and it is amazing. It's just beautiful. And like we were talking about before we came on to the radio show tonight, that maybe we might even be able to get him to play just a tidbit of something on his flute. I don't know if when we're going to do that, but
a little something there, a little love song, Apache love song.
Oh, and by the way, ladies out there, William Two Feather is single. He's looking for that partner of a lifetime. So make sure if you're listening, keep your eyes open and let us know if you're interested. Sorry about that, Two Feather.
It's rather rough to find an off-the-grid kind of salt-of-the-earth kind of mama. Everybody wants to go to 7-Eleven and go to the mall, you know, and living off the grid, which right now I live in a beach house on the island, but only till I find a wife, then I'm going back up to the mountains and going to dig in for the time of change, which is going to be in our lifetime.
Wow. And what do you mean exactly by the time of change?
Well, our prophecies say that the grandfathers and grandmothers' voices will lay in the dust for many generations, and there will be a time when they're heard again. And that time is just before the time of change, and after the floodgates have been opened up, which is when all the stars lined up with the harmonic convergence. And our prophecies say that's a time when the floodgates open up, and we're supposed to take our Native American indigenous training and share it with the world, which is why my three teachers trained me to do that. And I asked them later on, 10 years later, after training, you know, why me? And they said, who do your knees bend to on this earth? I said, no one. My knees bend to one person only, and that is Creator. They said, that's why you were chosen.
I think that's amazing. And I know you guys out there don't probably know this, but William has so many things going on. He's literally got books. He's got CDs. He does inventions and games and schools and everything. So that's so exciting. But I know we're kind of getting into that and more about him right now, but I'm really interested in your thoughts about Bigfoot. So we were talking before we came on about how Jen was asking if maybe you had a little bit more of information or some stories, some Native American stories that you'd like to share about Bigfoot.
Sure, I'd love to. Just to keep the records clear, I'm not trained in Sasquatch stuff, Bigfoot, but I do have affinity toward that, and I do have some stories. And to me, the Sasquatch, like the main thing is, where's the proof? Where's the body? Where's the skeletons? Well, you're not going to find any now or ever, because I believe that they're interdimensional beings and that they use the basic format of the universe, which is vibrational frequencies, to open up doors. So even if you shoot one, he he or she, the Sasquatch, can open up the dimensional door and go into their dimension. So even if they die, they're going to die on the other side, and you're not going to find proof. But I was up at a rebirthing workshop in where was that? Mount Shasta, and there was a double PhD astrophysicist and some other light kind of minded person, and we were up there watching the lights in Mount Shasta at 3 or 4 in the morning that everybody talks about, the famous Shasta lights, you know, the UFO stuff and everything. And we were sitting up there and we got to talking about Sasquatch, because I got one on my property. I go, explain that. She goes, well, there's a certain area I just never really went to, and one time I decided to go up there. And when she went up there and invaded on their turf, so to speak, they got all pissed off and started making noises, and she ran back to the house. And the next day when she went back out, the trees about 12 foot up were broken like toothpicks. And they were broken so that the trees fell one on top of the other on the trail that she walked on, which is basically telling her, don't come up here no more.
Wow, that's a great story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're all through Native American history and folklore, because they're like what other people call UFOs, unidentified flying objects. In the American world, we call them IFOs, identified flying objects, and there are star brothers and sisters. And they come down here and they show us things, you know, about plants and medicine, and they have a couple of tribes that they preferred over the other tribes. Like one race preferred the people up there in Washington State, Idaho, up in the Tri-Star area, where they all say they came from the dog star Cirrus. And then another kind of alien race like the Hopis, and then another kind of alien race like the Apaches, because we were like the warriors. So we had interaction with them on a regular basis. And we just identify them like people. They're just another kind of people. But back on the Sasquatch stuff, I mean, you get all the empirical stuff. Like you get the place where they sleep at. You get their hair where they laid at. You get the smell of them on the trails and stuff. And there's a lot of secondary kind of evidence there. But you don't really have the smoking gun, other than a couple of foggy little videotapes. But something we might want to talk about is how would I see you having actual contact with a Sasquatch? If you want to ask that question, I might be able to deal with it.
Boy, well, as long as it's okay to say on the air, I think we'd all like to hear the answer to that.
Well, this is it, because you're dealing with interdimensional beings. If you deal with them on their level in an interdimensional foundation, I think you'd have a better shot at it. So I would recommend a crew of gals going out around the full moon, because the gals that are in tune with the moon cycle will be having their menstruation about that time. And so you get a crew of 3 or 4 or 5 women out there in the woods on menstruation time, the younger bucks are going to be able to smell that. And then when they start coming around and you get an idea they're around, then you grab some of these magic mushrooms that the Samis use for the Vikings when they're healing them up, you know, sewing up all their wounds, and have a couple of their magic mushrooms with your moon time stuff, and they're around you and you know they're around, and it might allow you the opportunity to maybe get caught up in one of the little dimensional shifts, or maybe you can hear the actual vibrational frequency that opens up the doorway.
That's an interesting idea.
It is, although I've never done a magic mushroom. I don't know if I really want to, but
doesn't that increase the DMT in your body? Doesn't that help increase the DMT?
Yeah, everybody naturally has DMT in their body. It's called, if anybody has a chance to see the spiritual molecule, it's a really good 15-minute presentation. But the point is to come into their dimension. Like, for example, when I'm in Australia, I go and ask the Australian Aboriginal elders if I could have permission to do something on their land. And they go, nobody ever asked us permission. I go, well, that's our Native American way of doing it. And since this is your land, I'm asking permission. If you say no, we're going to go somewhere else.
That's the right thing to do.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is.
They drop, well, Jenna, tears. They drop tears on that.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I bet so. You know, there's a lot of generations of disrespect going on among the people. I had seen a movie quite a few years back about, it was called The Rabbit Proof Fence, and it was about what happened to the Aboriginal people in Australia. And it was a very similar story to what happened in North America.
Well, I spent over a year in Australia. I got a van and put a bed in it, but camping, and went around all over Australia doing workshops and teachings and healing work. And when I, as an Apache, we wear red headbands down in the south. And I didn't know it, but the Aboriginal medicine people wear red headbands also. And they're called Gadachi, because it depends on what country I'm in, what name they call me. They call me Gadachi, they call me Tonaha, they call me shaman, they call me holy man. It just depends on what region of the world I'm in. But what they did was the medicine people would go and grab one of the Aboriginal, because they're all on alcohol, you know, and they'd tow them away out to the woods and then tie them up to their tree for 3 days and let them piss and shit on themselves until they kick the alcohol problem. And then they tie them loose. So whenever I got around any of them, they're looking at me like that. Oh, my God, he's going to grab me and he's going to tie me to a tree.
Oh, no.
And I was going, wait, what's going on here? You know, until I figured out what was going on. So they call me Gadachi in Australia. They're also lawgiver.
Wow. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that form of treatment before, but hey,
if that's rough.
Good job.
Yeah, that is rough. Oh my gosh. Well, you know, getting back to Bigfoot, I know you and I had a conversation about a few things, and one of the things that Jen and I have talked a lot about, in fact, with a lot of people that we meet on our different events that we go on to, we always seem to talk about the smells of Bigfoot and how some people say they don't smell, some people say they do. And I was just wondering if you could kind of explain your thoughts on maybe the smell of Bigfoot.
I look back at history, you know, because history is a great teacher if we're willing to observe it. And one thing I noticed with one of the very ancient cultures, which is Aboriginal, they've been around for a really long time, the little black guys with the orange diapers that run around barefoot and stuff. And everything's poisonous in Australia. And what do they do? Well, first thing is they really don't believe in bathing. And the other thing is that when I went around to trade with them and stuff, I would always take cans of sardines because they'd love to open up the cans of sardines in oil. And then they rub the oil all over themselves and smell like sardine oil. If you can imagine what that smells like, added on to someone that doesn't take a bath. So it's their ancient cultural foundation of the way they believe. And one of the highest honors you can have is one of the Aboriginal will come and put their smelly, sweaty under armpits and rub it on your body. And when they did that to me, you can really smell it, you know. And I didn't realize that that was such a big honor. It was like, you know, a dog kissing you on the nose or something, and you never met them before. So
yeah.
If you look back at the historic foundation of these ancient cultures, and you look back at the Bigfoot, they're also an ancient culture. So they're tied more to ancient ways as opposed to a hot shower and taking a bath and then personal hygiene and stuff. Their personal hygiene's on a different foundational basis. So I find that in the Native American world, that there's a big olfactory kind of shroud of stuff around the Bigfoot so that they can be smelt pretty easily.
But do you also think that maybe they can also not be smelt?
Not really.
Oh, really?
They have their cultural ways, you know. It's kind of like we wear clothes, you know. And if you can find somebody not wearing clothes on the Riviera, maybe in Italy, once in a while on a sunny day, but the norm is that we wear clothes, and that's our foundation. And you don't see Bigfoots wearing bikinis or nothing like that. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. So if they're multidimensional creatures, and if they watch us from this other dimension, is it, if they're doing that, we wouldn't be able to smell them?
When they're in their dimension, no, but they walk through the portal into our dimension, and that's the time when we can smell them.
Okay.
And they really got this thing about stealing females. They love to steal females.
Tell us some stories.
Well, wait, why are you telling us to go out there then?
You're Sea Squatchers, and you want to know what's going on, you know?
Right, I'm just totally teasing.
Ski Squatch prophylactic or something with you. I don't know. You know, watch out.
Oh, my goodness. you think that they would be more attracted to a woman who was on her moon cycle or her menstrual cycle at the
Absolutely. They'll be attracted like a magnet.
Wow.
But be careful what you ask for.
Okay.
Hey, everybody have your cameras ready. They're yanking one of them away.
Oh, boy.
Maybe they'll just borrow them and give them back. I don't know.
Well, let's hope. Oh, my goodness. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Jenna would miss me. Well, I'm the only one that actually does that on our team.
Yes.
Well, you can get a couple of, like, you know, they got them professional choirs that go with the funerals, you know, in some countries. You can just hire a couple of young gals on moon time, you know, and pay them $100. And if they come back, they get 200.
Oh, no. Oh, William, I hope we don't get in trouble with you on the air.
That doesn't sound like such a good deal. I would think if I was one of those girls, I'd want 200 up front and then maybe have to give 100 back if I come back.
Well, if they're maidens, I mean, you can bump them up to 400.
Hey there.
Oh, that's so funny.
I don't know if they can sniff the difference, but who knows?
Oh, my Lord. Goodness. So, okay. Now, going back to Bigfoot again on the opposite side of the moon cycle.
Sure.
You were mentioning that you had some stories, some Native American stories about Bigfoot. Can you give us some interesting stories?
Well, mostly the stories are all geared around and stealing women. That's most of the big things. And the stories are just kind of when you're around in their area to respect them. That's the thing that has gone from our instant gratification society is that respect, not only for ourselves, but for our environment, which is the Native American way. When we go out to get medicine plants and there's a whole field of them, we don't take all the plants. We leave 30 or 40% so that plants can come back. And the same thing about our self-respect in our space. And so we ask for our space and respect. And so we give it as well as receive it. So the stories are basically geared around offering them their respect and their turf and their terms. And they come down here and steal a little bit of stuff here and there and stuff so we know what they like and we just give it to them.
So is that what you're talking about as far as respect? Because I know there's a lot of people out there that are thinking, well, what does he mean by respecting Bigfoot? You know, can you give us some examples of maybe?
Well, you respect their turf. You know, they have certain areas that they live in.
So just don't go in that area.
Don't bother their area. And they have certain things they like to do. Like they like to come down and get salmon, you know, out of the river and stuff. And they might have a certain fishing area that they like to come down and frequent, you know, and they... Bears get around them and stuff. The bears all run away. That's, you know, in the stories. I'm just picking little things off the stories. And so all the animals kind of, you know, don't get in their way and respect them. Although they live in that mutual respect world. And a Bigfoot's not just going to take a bear out because they're there in their fishing grounds. But, you know, when two-legged people go in there, you know, it's a different story because two-legged's packing guns and there's a $1 million reward out if anybody shoots one and all this kind of negative stuff, you know, which is really a disrespectful situation.
Definitely. Oh, I just, that's, it just breaks my heart to think that anybody could go out and just shoot for fun, to kill for fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, now I've been brought up as a hunter all my life. I shot my first gun when I was 3 years old, and we never got meat from the store, we always went to the meat locker. You got deer, turkey, pheasant, quail, rabbit, fish, whatever. So it was a different way of living. And nowadays, all the cows and everything are full of hormones and they're full of antibiotics. And, you know, when we grew up, I grew up drinking a half gallon of milk every day of my life, but now it's like drinking pus, you know, and all this people becoming lactose intolerant and all these chemtrails altering our atmosphere and everything. It's no wonder more people aren't sick, but it's all about money now. When you get sick, then you take pills, you support the pharmacy. The pharmacy sends the doctors down to the Caribbean for a week with their family for giving their prescriptions, and then they get side effects, and then now there's over a million children on psychotropic drugs right now, which is a big crime. And when I get my platform as an author and a Grammy Music Award winner and a Golden Globe Award winner, I'm going to say something about them children drugged out. And that's our future, you know, because they say if the sand's always perfect, where's the growth? There needs to be sand in the circle in order for us to have growth and development. And when you're dumbing these kids up, these youth are our future with drugs, they don't challenge the system, and where's the growth? So the ones who are in charge, getting all the money and making all the rules, stay in charge, and that's the whole divide and conquer, which I see all around the world.
Good point. Very, very good point. Boy, well, I know you and I got to talk about a lot of things. Jen, do you have any other questions? I know that you're probably going to have a lot of questions for him off the air, too.
I'm wondering if of the stories where women were stolen by Bigfoot, were there any stories where they got to come back, and what did they say about that? They never got to come back.
No, I've never heard any stories about they came back. Once they got them, they got them. I think it's kind of like what we used to do, you know, in the old days, if they were like below your belly button or lower, we'd take them in and raise them as our own tribe, and they would grow up learning our tribal ways. So I think it's like that, you know, survival thing of the survival of the fittest and genetic codes. I think once they bring a female into their domain, then they know how to get in and out and all that kind of stuff, and they don't want nobody going back telling the other people their delicate, soft, underbelly ways of doing things. So it's kind of like a survival tool, I believe.
Well, that doesn't sound good for the ladies.
Well, it depends on your point of view.
You think they maybe lived out their years with them?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. So they weren't lunch.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering the same thing. No, you know, and yeah, it would be.
But as far as I know, they don't eat on human flesh.
See, now, one of the rumors that we've heard is, and this is just rumors, there's so many different theories and people talking. One of the things that we've heard over time is that they are cannibals. Have you ever heard anything about that?
Never once.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know who said that.
Oh, I've heard it. I've heard it. Maybe it was on the internet. I don't believe everything on the internet, but just about almost.
Well, no, internet started as a good thing, but I believe it turned into an evil thing. And people can go on there anonymously and do their best to take somebody's whole life out, you know, in falsehood and lies, and they're not accountable. So I think all that needs to be taken with a grain of salt. You get the person in the crowd that nobody ever hears talking when they say, "Cannibal Sasquatch," and everybody listens to him, you know, and they'll just sell anybody down the river just to get a little bit of attention, truth or not.
You know what I think that came from? I think that comes from the people misidentifying what that people are talking about, because they talk about the giants who were cannibals. Yeah, and the giants were something different than Bigfoot.
That's way different.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people just start talking about the giants as if they're the same thing as Bigfoot because they were big. But the giants had two sets of teeth, and I've heard six fingers on each hand and six toes, and completely different from Bigfoot. So
completely, all the evidence is there. I mean, you got the skulls, you got the bones. I mean, you know, if you can't see a 14-foot tall human being bones laying in a thing and say, well, you know, it's not a figment of your imagination. It's just the facts.
Right, right. Well, here we are at the half of the show. We're going to have to take a 2-minute break. So please stay tuned, everybody. We'll be back with William Twofeather right after this.
Wonderful. Yes, thank you.
Jenna Valadez with The Basement Files. Tune in Friday nights, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Para-X Radio Network.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and well, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead. We know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files. Only on Para-X.
Vampires, werewolves, skinwalkers, all of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
What happens to a ghost when their home is torn down? No one thinks of the disembodied when they rip down old buildings, dig up cemeteries, and build clean, unhauntable condos. Every year, hundreds of spirits are driven out of their own haunts by the careless living to exist alone with no one to scare. At Para-X Radio, our hosts feel the plight of these evicted disembodied, and we're reaching out to you to please open your heart to one of these lost souls, such as the ghost soldier of the General Wayne Inn or the abandoned spirit cat of Benjamin Rush. So please, please, let a little spooky into your life. Won't you open your house to a ghost without a home?
Para-X.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is The Journey Radio Show, and when we are not live on the air, you can find us online at thejourneyradioshow.com. And hey, we're the She Squatchers. Check us out at shesquatchers.com, and right there you'll find some links to our Facebook page. Would you please follow them and give them a like, because we share all of our up-to-date information and the current goings-on with our team right there on Facebook. So please give us a like so you can see what's going on there. And hey, we're back on the show tonight. We've got a second half here with an awesome guest Jenna found down in Galveston, Texas, where she's wintering in the southern, warmer states. We've got William Twofeather on the line with us, and he's been talking to us about Bigfoot, and he's Apache, and he's also a Native American who is a metaphysical faith healer. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about William's work with that, and his music, and a bunch of other things. So welcome back, William.
Thank you very much.
Yes, yes. So Jenna, did you have a question?
I did, actually. Now, when we were talking, you had mentioned indigenous faith healing. Can you kind of explain what that is? Because I know you were saying that you do that, and I'd love to hear more about that. I'm sure everybody else would too.
Right. People ask, you know, what do you do? And I basically say that I do anything that the doctors and the hospitals can't or won't do. That's when they come to me. If I get a nickel for every time I heard, you're my last hope, I've been to everybody. I've been to the yogi, I've been to the shiatsu, I've been to the voodoo, I've been to everybody. Now I'm coming to you because there's nobody left. And I go, yeah, I know the story. Well, the thing about it is that we've had doctors around for the last couple of hundred years. Even if you go back, you know, to the Hippocrates, you know, even if you go back a couple of maybe even 500 years, but people been around for millions of years. Can you imagine that the people have been getting sick for millions of years and that they have to go somewhere? Well, they couldn't go to a doctor with a scalpel and side effects. They had to go to their traditional healer, and the community supported the healer. And the healer supported the community, and it worked back and forth. It was a symbiotic kind of relationship. So what we do in Native American faith healing, as well as the other faith healing disciplines I've seen around the world, is we stick with tradition, because tradition has proven to work. And it's here because it works. And when somebody comes along and thinks they're smarter and wiser than tradition, they decide to change it. It changes for a little while until they go out of the limelight or 6 feet underground, and it goes back to the natural order of the universe. So faith healing is a traditionally based way of returning us to balance and harmony, because I don't really like to say healing. I like to say return to balance and harmony, because people don't like to hear that they're broken. They're not really broken. They're just out of balance and harmony, which is all basically goes down to the universal laws, which is vibrational frequency. Everything has a vibrational frequency. And I've been able to incorporate 20 years of healing, 10 years of apprenticeship, which comes up to be 30 years, and all the being in the trenches. And I've come up with four inventions. One rebuilds the thyroid. One rebuilds the pancreas. One stops people from getting knee replacements. And one reverses Alzheimer's. And you wear them for 90 days when you sleep at night, and you take them off in the morning, and they're all based on vibrational frequencies. So one of these days, I'm going to get a sponsor or two that's going to sponsor one of the inventions, and I'm going to make the prototype with 3D printing. So if anybody's interested in doing stuff like that, they can just get a hold of me. We'll talk about my contact later on. So basically, it's returning people to balance and harmony, and there are some things that come into play that I cannot or will not override, and that's, for example, karma. Because some people have some karmic responsibility and atonement that needs to be done, and they're sitting there in the healing table, and from 1 to 100, I've took them from 20 up to 70, and then the angels from the light tell me, stop now, and I know I could finish the other 30%, but I have to pay attention, because if I go ahead and go against them, then I'm going to pay the consequence. Then that other 30% could be when they come true with their issues and their karmic responsibilities, and then perhaps then they can go back to full balance and harmony again.
Wow. And so are those just, you mentioned specific areas that you work on healing. Is that the only type of healing that you're, you're more trained, in?
I'm trained in all three areas, mind, body, and spirit. And I just use them three simple ways because it's a concept that I can easily get across. And I didn't know in my 10 years of apprenticeship and my first couple of years of healing that I had a special gift in bones. So I actually have three gifts: bones, chronic pain, and some types of cancers, not all kinds. Like I specialize in breast cancer, blood cancer, ovary cancer, thyroid cancer. But there's other cancers that I'm not good at, with prostate and colon and stuff like that. So my gifts are basically in bones.
Okay, but you'd know, I mean, if someone wanted to contact you and find someone who wanted some help that you couldn't give them, you could point them in the right direction, I'm assuming?
Oh, absolutely. Like I've done exorcisms for more than 10 years. And then in Norway, about 2 or 3 years ago, I just stopped doing exorcisms. But I do have exorcist people around me who I know are the real deal. So when somebody comes to me and says they want an exorcism, I just refer them to one of my other friends or healers. Like I got one out of Austin that's really good. And, you know, it'll cost them $5 or $10 grand, but she'll fly over there to Tokyo, you know, and fix up your person.
Wow. That's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like I was saying before, you know, you've got all these books, you've got all this music, you've got inventions, and, you know, tell us about some of the other things that you've got going on, like the schools and the games. And
right. I've been training healers all around the world in two actual disciplines. One is called drum washing, and the other one's called enlightened healing. And when I was in Slovenia doing a weekend training course in English to Italian, we recorded the whole weekend of training, and that turned into 5 DVDs. And so the 5 DVDs are going to turn into a 1-year course in faith healing. And I'm going to set up schools all around, one in Norway, one in Australia, one in Slovenia. I'm going to set them up all around the world, and there'll be 1-year courses. And what a lot of times that people don't get a grasp on it, grasp on is what they say, oh, thank you for training me. And they get a misimpression that I'm training them because of them, but I'm not. I'm training them because of when they go back into the community where they're training and they heal the people that are out balancing harmony in their area, them are the ones that I'm here actually to serve.
Wow. So basically right now what you're saying is you just need volunteers to help you get this done and to get your words out there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, for example, I got five books. Four of them are going to be published in English. And what I really need is, I spent 11 years writing five books and all the sacrifice and everything to do it. But now they need to be translated into Barnes & Noble books and Kindle books and iPad readers. So I asked for volunteers out there that know how to do that. If they'd come in and, you know, I can't really pay them right now, but when the books start producing money, they can certainly get some kind of, you know, thank you back at that time. So it's basically volunteer. I mean, need people to help set up gigs and to help set up the schools. And we got international taxes to deal with and a lot of devils in the detail kind of thing. So if people wish to contact me, they can reach me at 9999TF9999@gmail.com, and the TF for two feather, and they can just write me.
How many nines was that?
Four nines.
TF
to honor and then the four directions, north, south, east, and west. So four nines, TF, and then four nines at gmail.com.
Awesome. Gotcha.
Yeah, that is very cool. I think Jen's sharing that information right now into our chat room. So hi, everyone in the chat room, by the way.
Wonderful.
Yes.
I hope we save a little time for questions, because that's what I notice in a lot of times when I lecture around the world in different countries, that the speakers get up and they don't leave no time for questions. That's because they got all their little flashcards and they got their little books marked. And if you ask them a question that they're supposed to be expert and they can't answer the question, then it's like, gee, you wonder why.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. Have we had any questions? I don't have the chat room open, unfortunately.
There was one lady who wanted to know if we could hug Bigfoot.
Oh, funny.
What are you going to do to Bigfoot?
She wanted to know if we could go hug Bigfoot. I don't know about that.
Careful what you ask for. Wear some Giorgio.
Say, do you believe that, you know, we've talked to people too that mentioned that maybe the things that we put on, like cologne or different smells, some people say smell like the earth, or some people say smell like musk. Do you think it has anything to do with finding Bigfoot?
Yeah. Hello. I seen this video on YouTube of this deer hunter, you know,
yeah.
And he got some urine from a female deer that was in moon time, and he put it on him like that, and the deer came out and jumped him from behind and tried to mount the hunter.
Well, I don't.
That's why I was saying that if the Sasquatch girls went out on moon time, you know, that scent would bring in a buck, and you might be able to, like, get a cheap shot, you know, with a camera in.
Yeah, I don't want a buck to get me, but I'm wondering, you know, because we've actually heard more about, like, you know, certain perfumes or oils or, you know, so, but.
They carry like sound in a small area, you know, the scents carry, because human olfactories are very under the other animal olfactories. You know, like, you get a dog, it smells a shirt that somebody wore, because that's a witness of who they are, and then they could follow the trail. So that witness thing is when Native Americans used to run away from cameras going, oh, you're catching my spirit. Well, later on, they found out 100 years later that they were catching your spirit. Because if you take a picture of somebody and you hang it up in a post office and say $1,000, wanted dead or alive, and that picture is a witness of who you are. And that's why when I do divination or something, or spiritual consultations, I ask the person, the seeker, to bring something from the people who's in question, like a picture of them or a shirt they wore or a brush with their hair in it or something, which allows me to contact with that person a lot more easier. But a lot of times people say, well, you have to believe in that kind of stuff for it to work. And I say, no, you could believe that this pen's going to float all you want when I let go of it. But when I let go of it, gravity's going to take it down to the world. And I call that the natural order of the universe. So whether people believe it or not, it doesn't change very much, other than it can happen a little quicker when people are open to it. But even if they aren't, like, I get the husband and comes and says, oh, well, my wife paid X amount of dollars for healing. If I don't show up, we forfeit it. I said, that's right, because somebody else would have your hour slot here, you know. And when they get off the table and their eyes are open as big as silver dollars and they're jumping up and down going, I don't feel the pain, I don't feel the pain. I'm going, no, wait, 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 you know, don't jump up and down till after 4 days when the healing's done. Because even though the healing work happens, it's still continuing for 4 more days because some of the toxins and the poisons and the cancers and all that kind of stuff need to come out of the body. And each one of the 4 directions, northeast, south, and west, where the grandfathers and grandmothers have a day at the seeker and their healing until 4 days is done. And I tell people, don't contact me until after 4 days, because the second day they're going, oh, I'm urinating blue, you know, and I feel like I'm having a fever and I can't sleep and I'm coughing and spitting. And I said, I told you very clearly not to call me until after 4 days because you're not done yet. And then nobody calls after 4 days.
Wow. That's cool. Well, when we were talking, you mentioned when you were in, I think it was Japan, you, I don't know if this is a story that you can tell, I hope you can, but you had mentioned that you had a group of people watching and someone's ankle was very, very swollen. Would you be able to tell that story?
Sure, yeah. In Japan, there were a bunch of indigenous people. They're called Ainu, and they would be like the Native Americans here in America. Well, when the foreigners came from the land far away, they came in boats to Japan and they started decimating all the Native American tribes and the Japanese indigenous culture, and they killed every single tribe except for 4 of them. So there's 4 tribes and they've been put up in the north in Hokkaido, where to go 100 yards, you have to go 1,000 yards down and 1,000 yards up because it's very mountainous and you can't grow rice up there. Nobody else wanted to live up there. And when the last 4 tribes went up there, and they're basically a matriarchal system. And the matriarch is named Grandmother Ashitera, which in English, she calls herself Grandmother Begood. And there's an old grandmother with 10 or 12 children living with her. One doesn't have an eye, one doesn't have a leg, one's mongoloid Down syndrome, and she just takes care of all of them. So through her, the local Japanese people heard about me and asked if I would come in with a Shinto expert, and he wrote 30 books on Shintoism, and then a world expert named Ben Fulford, who used to be the Southeast Asia bureau chief for Forbes magazine, until they told him to not write a story on somebody that was on the in. And he said, I'll write about anybody and everyone, and he gave up his $300,000 job on ethics. And Ben Fulford has now the White Dragon Society, so, and myself as a Native American faith healer. And they did a 2-day shoot that they put on pay-per-view in Japan in 1-hour increments. And the 3 of us compared notes. And what I noticed was, the thing I noticed traveling around the world, working with sick people in different cultures and healers, is that the truth is the truth no matter what. And that is the foundation of all things, and it is what it is. And everything's based on vibrational frequencies.
And didn't you say that you were working in front of a group, though, and you actually put your hands on someone or put your hands around someone?
Yes, yes. Well, one of the presenters named Ben Fulford had a big old swollen ankle because he twisted his ankle. And I worked on it for maybe 5 or 8 minutes, and then the ankle went down, down, down. And the black and blue went away, away, away. And all of a sudden, in 5 or 6 minutes, and the whole film crew was there, about 20 of them, you know, audio, film, post-production, pre-production. All, they were all there just watching it all happen, and their eyes were opened up as big as silver dollars, and it was all on camera.
Oh, that's fun. Is there a place we could watch that video?
Sure. I have a YouTube called... if anybody wants to just look up Two Feather Web TV, I got a bunch of videos up on there, maybe about a dozen. I'm having it redone right now, and I'm getting ready to actually put up some healing work that was done. I'm going to put them up on their YouTube here very soon. Thing about I haven't been able to allow the comment section because the higher you get, the bigger the bullets come on you. And the people that say they're faith healers, and I get around their turf, and they've been working on somebody for 4 years, and they're not fixed, and I come around in 15 minutes, they're fixed. And then they start calling me names and talking me down and stuff, because for 4 years they couldn't fix them, but I fixed them in 15 minutes. And then, oh, well, he's not really Native American, and he don't really have no teachers. He can't really. I said, well, how come I fix your guy in 15 minutes?
Yeah.
So get that kind of stuff. So I can't let the comment section be open, and I'm not smart enough, techno enough, to take the comments into my mail and check them and then put them on. So that's another volunteer thing. I had someone that volunteered, but then they took off and went to go manage a rock band and left me high in the dust because I can't pay them right now. I'm going to pay them on the back end.
Yeah. Well, and that's a hard thing. You know, when you need people to help, you know, everybody has to pay for their families and everybody needs money. So it's really hard to do that. But maybe there are a few people out there that would be able to make this happen for you. But I do have a question for you.
Sure, go ahead.
With everything that you've got on, what's your biggest dream in life right now?
Well, I have a couple of dreams. One, instead of being top five in the Grammy Music Awards, which I was in 2001, I think it was, I would really like to win a Grammy. I'd like to do a little more. I've been in about 10 or 12 movies as an extra. I would like to finally someday get a Golden Globe. And I also would like to submit the books in for as many awards as I can. And I'd like to have a whole department in that area. First-time author, cultural study author, indie author. I'd like to win some awards. And also, really, one of my goals in life is to have a lifetime mate, because I'm just really tired of walking on my own. And I basically am going to write 22 more books in the series, 27 books. But I put my foot down and I said, I'm not writing no books until I get a mate. And that's final. I've written 5 books and I proved it. But the kind of mate that I need, off the grid kind of gal, you know, kind of rough around the edges, is not that easy to find these days. So I've lived off the grid for quite a few years, and it's not the same life as leaving your electricity on all the time. I mean, we still manage and stuff, but I don't want to stay away from having someone come out and stay for 6 months and say, I can't take it out here on a ranch with horses and cows and chickens and wild deers and elk running around in the front yard, you know, and want to go back down to the city, because it's not an easy life. So I've not been good at taking second best.
Well, that's how I grew up on a, well, we grew up on a farm where we grew, raised and hunted everything we ate, except for sugar and flour and the occasional hot dogs and chocolate chips at the store. But I think that was a very unpopular way of living, organic, before organic was cool. But I think people are going back to that nowadays.
Well, if you look at Hippocrates, who started medicine, you know, his famous words that are quoted quite often is food is medicine and medicine is your food. And what they're feeding us with all these preservative foods, I mean, I got a loaf of bread in there for 2 months that didn't get mold on it. I mean, what's going on here, you know?
That's true.
So say someone wants to alkaline their body. We were talking about alkalining bodies. And say someone wants to get healthy, what would you suggest for them?
Well, that's the whole big thing. When your body's in alkaline state, then it doesn't leave a breeding ground for all the methyl ethyl bad stuff. But when your body is acidic, that's the breeding ground for all these cultures and all these things that people get. So the idea is to alkaline your body. And I can go over stuff like eating fibers. And one of the biggest things is like sodas. It all has a bunch of little bubbles in it. Little bubbles go up, you know, and it strips away your digestion and everything. So it's really a mind over matter thing. If you don't mind, it don't matter. One of my favorite sayings. So if you don't mind being in bad shape, then it doesn't matter to you. But if you mind and say so, these are two of the strongest tools we have in our arsenal, is will and manifestation. And in when I train people in 3-day spiritual warrior training camps, we go over our spiritual arsenal to fight in the light as light warriors against the dark side, because there is a balance in the universe and there is a light and dark. And a lot of times people say, well, we don't need no protection. We're here in love and stuff. And I'm going, well, shame on you, you know. And we like to say, know your friends, but know your enemies better, and keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. So now they got this thing called the Sun Tzu, the Art of War, and but that's been around for generations before anybody even heard the name Sun Tzu, the Art of War.
Wow. Okay, then I've got one more question. Sorry, I'm just so full of questions. We didn't even get to start on my questions today. I actually got to go over to his house today, and we were talking, and I was helping with his computer, if you can believe it. Me helping someone with their computer. But, okay, so you didn't tell me you were in movies. So how in the world did you go from all of this to movies? Is it who you know, or did you just happen to be in the right place at the right time?
No, I just went and got an agent. And then the agent started booking me, and the agent took their cut off until one day I got blackballed from the agency because I was on a Masters of the Universe shoot set. Anyway, it's a long story, but I got kicked out because I was hunting, and I was camping a couple days before, and there was no hunting and no camping allowed, and then I had my wolf with me, and then but anyway, yeah, it's really fun because working on movies, they feed you really good.
Do they? Yeah. Well, hopefully it was healthy and alkaline. Is that you, the little beeps? Are you getting phone calls saying how awesome you're doing on the radio?
I can count the people on one hand that have this phone number. I don't like phones. You see everybody sitting down to dinner and they're all looking at their phones, you know, and then the people are out on a date and each one of them got their own phone. So I'm just like an anti-phone person. You know, I wonder what happens, why your ears get hot after you talk on a cell phone for a while, you know, and all these brain things are going through your head and everything. So I really don't like phones. They're necessary evil.
And that's what we're saying. No, your mate is not going to be able to be using a phone that often is basically what you're saying.
No, I could for special occasions. I mean, we got to get to know each other somehow.
Okay.
I like Skype because there's no BS going on in Skype. You know, you can see somebody's face.
Like when they roll their eyes or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I just think you're so interesting. I am so thankful that you came on, and I'm so thankful that you've just given us all of these stories and ideas. And Jen, how did I do in finding a guest?
You did good. You did good. And I'd just like to say miigwech to Michael, to William Twofeather. And miigwech, that's the Ojibwe one for thank you, or big thanks. And he already knew that, so, but for the listeners anyway.
So, you know, if there's anything else, we only have a few minutes left on the hour. Is there anything else that you wanted to get out to the public?
Yes, I'd like to say something about what's going on with our political situation, although I'm not a political person. You know, all this diversionary stuff, what's really happening is our focus and attention is being taken off the true matters. Like, for example, veterans like myself. I've been fighting for my Agent Orange for years and years and being denied and denied and denied. And 23 of my teammates came back in body bags and I came back alive. And I really think that the world needs to honor their warriors because my brothers gave their lives, their families and everything to defend our freedom. And I think it's only right that their veterans are taken care of. But you don't hear nothing about veterans right now, hardly anything. And so the real things that are happening, you know, with the border and all this kind of stuff and politicians and this party and that party, I'm not no party. I'm just a constitutional person, so I really think that we need to help our media come back to the reality of what's happening all the time.
All right. Well, that is the end of the show. We're over time right now, so I'm going to have to say good night, and thank you so much for coming on. We'll see everybody next week. Good night.
Thank you.